This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest,
Edward Gray, legal writer. Tonight's subject, our Supreme Court decisions handcuffing our police.
You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Los Angeles, California is Mr. Ed Cray, freelance writer on legal topics and sociology. If you would like to ask Mr. Cray a question on tonight's topic, have recent Supreme Court decisions handcuffed our police, or make a comment on the courts, call us here at Night Call. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number to call is area code 313-846-6601. The operators are now on duty, the lines are open, and we await your call. Area code 313-846-6601. Mr. Cray, have recent Supreme Court decisions handcuffed our police?
No, the recent Supreme Court decisions, and especially the three which seem to promote the most controversy, the Mallory decision in 1957, the Knapp decision in 61, and now most recently the Escobedo decision in 64, have not handcuffed the police.
What are these decisions, Ed?
Mallory is a decision which has application only in the federal courts. It's an interpretation of the federal court rules, which says that a person arrested must be taken promptly before a magistrate so that he can be told his rights to remain silent, his rights to an attorney, his rights to bail. And it says that the police cannot delay presenting him before a magistrate so he can learn of his rights, so that the police can wring a confession from him. Knapp, in 1961, I should add that Mallory, the thing that the police don't like about Mallory is that if they do get a confession while they have illegally detained a suspect, then the confession is not admissible in court, and the man cannot be convicted on the basis of his confession. In 1961 came the Knapp decision, and basically what this decision says that, quite simply, is that any illegally seized evidence, any evidence which is the fruits of illegal search or illegal police procedure, may not be introduced in state or federal courts and used to convict somebody. The police, in other words, must obey the law themselves. Finally, the last decision, the one that bothers perhaps the police the most, and for reasons I'll explain later, is the Escobedo decision. I think it occurred in 1961. Danny Escobedo in Chicago was arrested by the Chicago police, and even though he asked to see his lawyer, he was not permitted to see his lawyer. And then the police made a series of other mistakes, which I could and will go into perhaps later. At any rate, the end result was the Supreme Court decided that once the police focus on a suspect, he must be provided counsel. They cannot interrogate him without giving him the benefit of talking to an attorney. And if they do that, then the confession that they wring from him in these secret interrogations cannot be used in court. These three decisions are basically the ones the police most dislike. These three are the ones that cause the police to indeed wring their hands and scream that, you are destroying traditional law enforcement, and law enforcement as we know it has been ruined, and only the criminal will benefit. That's a favorite one. That ignores the Constitution. Indeed, as all do these complaints, they ignore the Constitution.
Well, now, many people had claimed that we're coddling criminals today. Aren't we sort of bending over backwards to take care of the rights of the criminal? And what about the guy that's attacked?
Well, in the first place, we're not bending over backwards to defend the rights of the criminal. And if you think we are, all you have to do is go down to any criminal court and take a look. and judge for yourself whether anybody's being coddled. Yeah, imagine yourself standing before the bench, accused of armed robbery, first offense, and being sentenced 20 years to life. That's hardly criminal coddling, and I think the prison statistics published by each of the states will amply demonstrate we don't coddle criminals.
Well, now, the figures that I have read recently, Ed, indicate that crime is in the on the rise in this country. Are these correct?
Yes and no. I think there is more crime in the United States as far as the reports are concerned, but I don't think there may necessarily be more crime. That is to say, we are now improving the reporting system. Annually, each of the departments reports the number of crimes committed within their jurisdiction. They report this to the FBI. Now, the FBI will be the first to admit, in fact, they have tacitly admitted, that they send out monthly training bulletins on how to gather statistics, because the departments have not been uniform, though they're called uniform crime reports. Many departments refuse to report crimes, because if they indeed report crimes, it'll make them look like they're not doing their job. Many departments define crime very loosely. That is to say, it's got to be pretty serious before they report it, and the minor offenses are not reported. In the southern states, offenses which involve only Negroes, that is, Negroes, for example, assaulting Negroes, are rarely reported at all. This makes, at least in some areas, the southern states look quite good as far as the rate of crime is concerned. Then furthermore, we're getting better at reporting our crime statistics, and as we upgrade that, it looks like we're getting more crime. Then we also have the problem that there are simply more people in the United States. We also have the problem that crime in the suburbs is increasing, at least by reports, that where previously crime in the suburbs was handled quietly by the police, going to the influential father, and the father takes care of it, he says he'll punish his boy, and a no crime report is filed, especially if the kid's just joyriding in a stolen car. Whereas in the central city, especially in the Negro communities, in the Mexican-American communities, and Puerto Rican communities, that joyriding is sure reported, because Papa can't guarantee that he's going to discipline his son, indeed, if there is a father in the house. All these things, plus many others, cast at least a gray light on what we call crime figures.
You're saying we can't believe the figures, then?
I'm saying that we must use the figures judiciously, and I don't think they're being used judiciously.
Well, why is this?
Well, let me say, most of the people who scream about the increase in crime talk about percentage increase of crime. If you started out with 10 murders in your city, and the next year there were 2 more murders, and that means 12 murders the next year, well, you just had a 20% increase in the murder rate. And significantly, actually, you only had 2 more murders. You may have a much bigger population.
I see.
But now, of course, percentage, your crime rate looks extremely high.
In other words, this is how to lie with figures.
Yeah, I remember Carl Sandburg's quote, figures don't lie, but liars can figure.
Now, I've been reading a great deal about the Negro and crime recently. Can we attribute all this to the fact of that the math involved here is not very accurate, that Negroes are not involved in as many crimes as they are given credit with being involved in?
No, I don't think that's true. I think, frankly, not just Negroes, but anybody who is economically disadvantaged, that's the current catchphrase these days, in other words, poor people, are more likely to commit crimes, especially certain kinds of crimes, crimes of property, burglary, robbery, than are people who live in suburbia, who don't commit crimes, who don't rob with a pistol, but rob with a pen, white-collar crime. Negroes do commit crime, a great deal of it, and a percentage far out of proportion to their percentage in the population. And I think the same is true with other minority groups. But the reasons are not because they are Negro, but because they are poor.
Our guest tonight, Mr. Ed Cray. Our topic, have recent Supreme Court decisions handcuffed our police? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call. where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him?
It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our topic tonight on Night Call: have recent Supreme Court decisions handcuffed our police? Our guest, Mr. Ed Cray, a freelance writer on legal topics. And if you'd like to ask Mr. Cray a question or make a comment about the police and the legal situation in the United States today, give us a call here at Night Call. Now remember, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make the call collect. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere, and you may call collect. Area code 313-846-6601. The lines are now open. The operators are on duty, and we await your comment. Ed, recently we've heard an awful lot of people talking about the courts. And in fact, I've read in some publications that some people feel that the communists are influencing our court decisions. What do you think about that?
The courts of the United States, and even those I disagree with, and there are some, checking for communists simply because I disagree with their decisions in one or another case, or in a lot of cases either. I think it's simply the only word I can think of is bilge water or canal water to describe the courts as communist because you don't like their decisions or because you think that you can see the how this helps the communists subtly, etc. And the movement to impeach the Chief Justice is as foolish as it is stupid.
You're talking about Earl Warren, of course.
Yes. And I'm talking, I suppose, without naming them, I'm talking about the John Birchers and fellow ilk who are convinced now that 70% of the United States is communist. And if that's the case, what are they fighting for?
Well, now, Ed, let's talk about this. The idea that, all right, maybe the extreme groups in the United States have criticized the courts, but can we put all policemen that have criticized the courts into this category? I'm sure there are many thinking officers and people who have studied this thing, and they feel that the courts are hampering their activities. Right. Now, we just don't brush these charges aside, can we?
No, I'm sure they, not only policemen, there are plenty of other people, with judges indeed, who feel that the various Supreme Court decisions or ruling court decisions do hamper the police, and the policemen certainly say this. As I indicated earlier, any number of decisions, this will cripple law enforcement as we know it. This can only help the criminal. The argument really is not whether it can help the criminal. The argument is whether or not the decisions and what the police activities are in keeping with the Bill of Rights, especially the Bill of Rights, but also, of course, with the Due Process Amendment. The police are fretful. They're very angry when they are criticized indirectly for their activities in a court decision. A court decision which hampers a traditional police practice of taking a guy into a room, and they used to do this, this was common before 1931, this is ancient history, and literally beating a confession out of him. People would confess simply enough to stop the beating, and grateful enough if they lived through it. The police didn't like that either when we stopped this kind of confession. Well, the police were convinced he was guilty. They got the confession out of him. That proved that he was guilty.
Well, now, where do you get this information that police in the 30s were beating up everybody they arrested?
Well, anybody who might doubt that, I didn't say everybody, but...
I see.
Many people, a significant percentage. Anybody who doubts that the police in the 30s were doing it, might in the 20s and then into the 30s, might read the Wickersham Commission report, the National Commission on Law Enforcement, which published an 11-volume report on criminal law and justice in the United States.
Does this go on today?
To a much lesser extent, it goes on today. But instead of beating the confession out of people, they have other more subtle means of coercion. A case decided a few years ago, they told the guy if he didn't confess, they'd arrest his family, too. He didn't know any better that they couldn't arrest his family. Indeed, the fact of the matter is he was a minority group member, and he was fully ready, willing to believe that the police would arrest his family because they make too often poor arrests anyhow.
You're claiming that the police are more subtle today in their methods of extracting a confession. Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
How are they more subtle?
Well, they have a number of devices. They play, they work in teams. In fact, there's an extensive book by one of the foremost police spokesmen, a fellow by the name of Inbaugh, Fred Inbaugh. And some of the methods that they use are the good friend and the bad the bad guy, and the bad guy threatens the man. He talks tough to him, and then the good guy comes along and says, well, you want to really avoid trouble with that other guy. He's really a bum. Here are some of the tactics that Inbaugh says that you should use.
That sounds suspiciously like the methods that we attribute to the communists when they brainwash somebody.
Judge for yourself. I can read a long list of a table of contents of Inbaugh's book, which is called Criminal Interrogation and Confession, which is a real standard book for police officers.
Read some of those if you have it handy.
Tactics and techniques for the interrogation of suspects whose guilt is definite or reasonably certain. Display an air of confidence in the subject's guilt. Point out some, but by no means all, of the circumstantial evidence indicative of the subject's guilt. Call attention to the subject's physiological and psychological symptoms of guilt. Sympathize with the subject by telling him that anyone else under similar circumstances or conditions might have done the same thing. Reduce the subject's guilt feeling by minimizing the moral seriousness of his offense. These are very neatly calculated, very fine psychological devices.
But are they wrong to use?
They are wrong if indeed they become mental coercion. It depends on the person they're interrogating. If it's a guy who is an idiot, and believe me, are of low mental ability, maybe it is wrong. Now, the courts haven't decided that. That's a moral issue that the police are not always called upon to judge. The question is not a black and white thing, and I'm not going to suggest that all police interrogation is bad. It's when they interrogate, and most importantly, do they interrogate without warning the person arrested of his rights? Now, the Constitution, or actually the Bill of Rights, one of the inalienable rights of anybody, is to be represented by counsel. The police don't want anybody represented by counsel in those first hours after an arrest, because it is in those first hours after an arrest that most confessions are obtained. And the police are certain, and I think perhaps with some justification, that if indeed if a man is allowed to know his rights, not to be a witness against himself, the Fifth Amendment in the first place, that's what an attorney would tell him, or his right to have an attorney, then indeed he's more likely to confess. Now, the people who confess are not the people who've been arrested before. They know their rights. Once you've been in jail for 30 days, you know every right. These guys become great guardhouse lawyers. It's the first offender the police want to get this way. It's the guy who has never done anything before and is arrested by the police, perhaps with probable cause, perhaps legally or perhaps not so legally. I'm not questioning that. The police will often arrest with under very suspicious circumstances and then get a confession to use that to justify their arrest. This kind of thing, the Constitution says is illegal, or the Constitution frowns upon, and the courts say is unconstitutional, because all constitutional matters have to be judged.
Well, Mr. Cray, I have a caller now from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, an old friend of ours here on Night Call, Mr. Dave Adams, and Dave tells me that it's snowing in Denver tonight. Hello, Dave. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Yes, hello, Mr. Kent.
Dave, your comment tonight.
I'm sort of a controversial person, and I don't like to call up and pat somebody on the back, so I want to take issue with the gentleman.
Mr. Cray?
On his mathematical computation there, he referred to colored people as a minority, and I like to say that only one-fourth of the population on Earth is Caucasian, and three-fourths are of colored skin, or colored pigment, so therefore the Caucasians are in the minority, and they keep saying minority and they refer to the majority. And I'd also like to say that since 1950, the Supreme Court has been trying to overstep its boundaries and trying to tell the state Supreme Court and our state judicial system how to run its own government, and that is what the crux of the problem is. It's simply that the Supreme Court should handle federal matters and leave our states' rights alone.
Ed, would you care to comment on Dave's comments?
As for the majority-minority problem, very quickly, in the United States, Negroes constitute about 18% of the population. I think we can consider them a minority in the United States. My comments were directed to the United States. Now, as for the states' rights problem, the police officers bring these decisions on themselves, and indeed that's been admitted by the head of the California Highway Patrol and a former district attorney at that, Bradford Crittenden. He said, quote, "We asked for these decisions by bad police practices." The gentleman says that it started in 1950. It didn't start in 1950. If memory serves, it started in 1936 with Brown versus Mississippi. This is a police case where the police clobbered a Negro and got a confession from him. And this was the first decision where the United States Supreme Court reversed and stepped into the state criminal area, saying to the state, you just can't run free.
The Supreme Court has a right to oversee, to go over the head of the state Supreme Court?
I do.
You do? Well, then they should have impeached this judge who made this ruling and had the proper judge in the state level ahead of it. Why bring in the federal? That's the trouble with our country now, is there's too many federal people involved, and they're going to engulf us and make us become more of a socialistic country instead of the good old USA like I view it.
Well, you're trying to make this a political discussion. I'd rather keep this on a level of what are your legal rights. If you want to argue politics,
I'm not arguing politics. I'm only trying to say that if this man couldn't have gotten justice, he should have had his case taken to another judge.
But what happened to you, sir? Under the law, you can't do this.
You want to go to another judge because this judge is biased or whatnot. I mean, there's more than one. Should have been more than one judge he can go to.
No, there's not. That's the point. You have a trial judge, and then you have in the state you have an appellate judge, and then usually there's only one appellate judge, and then there's the state Supreme Court. Now, in these three cases, in those three courts, the confession was admitted. The guy had no recourse but to go to the federal courts and say that his rights as a citizen were infringed upon. Not that his rights in the state, under the state constitution, but his rights under the federal constitution were infringed upon because the state admitted this evidence, which is beaten from him.
Is the federal law for a police officer to hit a citizen in any way?
Now,
is it federal law or is it a state law?
Yet there was no federal law in 1936. There is now.
Dave, it's time to break the stations, and we're going to have to draw to a halt here with your comments.
Good night, Mr. Gibbs.
Good night, David.
Freedom ring.
Yes, sir. Mr. Dave Adams from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN.
Our guest tonight, Mr. Ed Cray. Our topic, have recent Supreme Court decisions handcuffed our police? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
We continue our look at crime this week on Night Call. Our guest tonight is Mr. Ed Cray, who is a freelance writer specializing in legal topics. Our topic tonight, have recent Supreme Court decisions handcuffed our police? And if you'd like to ask Mr. Cray a question or make a comment, call us here at Night Call. Our number is area code 313-84-666. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number to call is area code 313-84-666-01. And we're now accepting calls and we await your comment. Mr. Gray, we have a caller from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Margaret Harmon. Hello, Margaret. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a comment, not really a question, on that disagreeer again from Baltimore.
Okay, disagreeer from Baltimore.
I'd just like to say when the modern liberal social workers, do-gooders, bleeding hearts, whatever they are, get finished with totally discrediting police forces and making fools out of them and screaming police brutality every time you turn around. When they turned it completely back into a jungle, I don't want to be here, but I hope he enjoys what he's done.
Margaret, is that your comment?
Yes, sir.
Do you have anything else you'd care to say?
Lots, but I think I'd better do it.
Well, I want to thank you for your comment, Margaret. Good night.
Good night.
Margaret Harmon, a lady in Baltimore who feels that, Mr. Cray, that people like you are destroying public confidence in policemen.
That
you want to...
Bleeding heart. Well, Mrs. Harmon, or Miss Harmon, if I can possibly reassure you, the last thing in the world I want to do is to destroy public confidence in the police. Because if we do that, the police themselves will not operate. If we do that, that is indeed the way to pull the plug on crime. If you think these cries of police brutality are unfounded, I would like to read you, if I may, this is kind of unfair, I'd like to read you a statement which I took from an eyewitness to police malpractice, brutality, here in Los Angeles on the night of August 11th in our riots. I think it's enough to convince most people that there is police malpractice and police brutality. Not necessarily a lot, but however much there is, it is too much in a system, in our system of government. I will read this, if I may. Shortly after 12 p.m. midnight, we heard many sirens. I think Chief Parker admitted to 20 cars going south on San Pedro across Imperial Highway, then circled through the community. It was a whole convoy of police cars traveling, I estimate, at 50 miles an hour, which drove through the Negro community between San Pedro and Stanford and 120th. The cars eventually pulled to a stop. Attracted by all the noise of the sirens, a large crowd gathered, curious to know what was happening. There were as many as 500 or 600 people lining Avalon Boulevard.
As the people came to see what was happening, the police got out of their cars. I arrived just in time to see the police trip people in the crowd who tried to run with their billy clubs. As they lay there, the police beat them. Some were on their knees, begging the police to stop beating them with their clubs. My husband and I actually counted 10 policemen beating one Negro man as he lay on the sidewalk. The man being beaten by the 10 policemen was no further than 6 feet away from us. And my husband yelled, "You have him helpless. Don't kill this man. Don't kill this man." We were screaming, and others were also screaming, "Please don't kill him." As they beat that man, whose name I did not learn, and many others at the corner of 115th and Avalon Boulevard, the police shouted, and I can't read these words over the air, else the FCC will be on us, and many other things like, et cetera, et cetera. When we attempted to intercede for the man being beaten, a policeman approached us with his club raised and said, "Move out, niggers." It was just nigger, nigger everywhere. This kind of thing, I have more than 50 statements collected in less than 2 weeks, which indicate that, yes, there is police malpractice, police brutality, and we cannot overlook it. And if we do overlook it and try to brush it under the rug by yelling, "Bleeding heart, bleeding heart," we are failing the very thing that the people who believe themselves to be strong conservatives say they're defending, and that's the Constitution of the United States, and especially, the First Ten Amendments.
The statement that you read for us, Mr. Cray, gathered this statement yourself, or this is from an article?
No, I took this statement myself, along with some 50 others, 50 more that'll turn your stomach with the brutality you described. Mrs. Bradley, the person who gave me this statement, was not arrested. She had nothing to gain by giving this statement or by, quote, lying, unquote. She was just a plainly concerned citizen who saw this alleged incident.
Again, it's still alleged, though. It hasn't been proven in a court of law that took place.
I'm not trying to say this, but when you can discount one, but you can't discount 50, you see.
What about the idea that a person is innocent until he's proven guilty? Do you think that most Americans still buy this?
Well, I would hope they would, and they suddenly buy it when it involves them or their children and all of those who can say that courts are bleeding hearts and that we're destroying the police suddenly change their tune if it's their son or their daughter who's been picked up for, getting drunk at a party, a teenage party, and then taken down to the judge, or if it's their brother or sister who was in the wrong place at the wrong time and was arrested because he was a witness to something. They suddenly change their tune. They stop saying, "Well, you're innocent until you're proven guilty," or they demand to know where the search warrant is. They have every right to ask for it, or where the arrest warrant is. Until then, until they're actually involved, they tend to say, "Well, we've got bleeding hearts who are protecting the criminals and destroying law enforcement," and they put slogans on their cars, "Support your local police."
Well, don't you believe we should support our local police?
I believe we should support our local police to the fullest. I expect, though, that in turn that the local police will support the Constitution they are pledged to support.
Are you inferring that some policemen do not support the Constitution?
I'm not only inferring it, I'm stating it.
Mr. Gray, what about this idea of a man is innocent until proven guilty? In Europe, don't they reverse that you're guilty until proven innocent?
Well, you can say that to make it simple. Europe has the inquisitorial system where they quiz you until they get enough evidence from you to prove you're innocent, or on the continent, the Napoleonic Code. But in the United States, we don't. In the United States, we make the flat a priori assumption that you are innocent until you're proven guilty. And the police have to, or the courts, not the police really, the courts have to produce evidence against you, not from your own mouth. And this is most important, that they must get others to say, "This is the man who did the crime." And this is under our presumption, or under our law, and it's basic to our law, you're innocent until you're proven guilty.
You wouldn't buy the European system here in the United States, then?
I'd have a tough time living with myself.
Ed, we have a caller from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Gary Alterman. Hello, Gary. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Well, I hope that I don't get too emotional here.
Okay.
But I would like to know if he condones the recent incident in L.A.
The riots?
Yes.
Ed?
Well, I thought you said she, speaking of Mrs. Harmon. No, I don't condone the riot. That is to say, I don't condone anarchy in any way, shape, or form that comes. And I'm not going to try to apologize for the rioters by attacking the police, because somehow that's going to brush the whole thing under the rug. You can't ignore what happened. There were reasons for that riot. And if we pretend that there weren't reasons for the riot, there's going to be another riot. And this is the thing the city of Los Angeles is struggling with right now. Probably it's a little too parochial, but it is a problem. There were problems in that community. I'll cite just one figure. Unemployment is 3 times higher in the Negro community than it is in the white community. The same high school graduate who comes out of a Negro high school is unemployed when the kid who graduates a white high school, theoretically with the same education, we're pretty proud of that equal education in California, he gets a job.
Gary?
Yes?
Do you have any other comments? I have a feeling that you want to say something else.
I can't possibly see any excuse for that incident. I mean, destroying property, and it's just, it seems to be this age that we live in. You know, these kids want identity. And, they want to be known for something. But when, I live in a large city here. And, there's such appeasement to the NAACP, and CORE. And, it seems like it has handcuffed the police here. And, it's rather upsetting to me. Gary, let me make a point. You said the kids. In the first place, the rioters arrested in Los Angeles, there were some 4,100 of them arrested over the 6 days. 91%, you can figure out the multiplication of it, say 3,800 of them, were adults. They weren't kids. They were adults. They were over 18 years of age, and most of them were in their 20s, late 20s and 30s. Furthermore, you state that we're appeasing the NAACP, and I assume you would lump together CORE and others, SNCC and other civil rights groups.
Right.
Well, the fact remains that obviously they didn't appease them enough in California, because when the riot came and the Negro community erupted as it did, the leadership, which had come from the NAACP and CORE and all these other groups, was bankrupt. Nobody would listen to them, because indeed they had never been able to produce before. In other words, all this appeasement you keep talking about never took place.
Gary?
Yes. And I feel that all of these wild charges about police brutality are absolutely ridiculous. Because how else can they disperse wild, raving maniacs?
Well, you obviously didn't listen very closely to that statement. And that's all.
It always makes headlines, you know? I just can't accept it.
Well, could you accept a series of sworn statements? A false arrest of harassment, of rousts, of any number of incidents. You see, you might not want to accept one statement, but what about all of the others we get? And it's not just a matter of one or two a year. It's many, many, many. And they're not easily dismissed. And you can't pass it off and simply say, well, I was thumbing through papers there, trying to get another one out, the one that particularly revolted me, where the guy had his skull fractured, lost 6 teeth, and probably will lose an eye, and then wasn't arrested, mind you. The police simply beat him for the sheer, I assume, emotional and physical joy.
Well, no, I can't accept that. I cannot do it.
You can't?
Because how else can you break up the riot?
This wasn't in the riot, my friend.
Oh.
This happened, on a dark street, when he was a prisoner in the back of the car. There are witnesses to this. There are 4 witnesses to this. And the police simply pulled him out of the car. He was not handcuffed. Then they clubbed him. They pulled over, they had time to pull over in park, walk around, take him, he was sitting alone in the back seat, take him out of the back seat, and then beat him. For no other reason than...
I didn't know that. Were you there?
Hello?
Yes. He asked if you were there, Ed.
Was I there?
Yes.
No, but I took statements from six people who were.
That doesn't impress me at all.
Well, Gary?
You're saying that there are liars.
I am not saying that, but I don't know.
What if I told you one of those people was not one of those people who saw it wasn't a Negro?
How's that again?
What if I told you that one of the people who saw that incident wasn't a Negro? In other words, there were five Negroes and one white who saw that incident. Would that perhaps convince you a little more?
Possibly.
Uh-huh. In other words, you're going to judge the veracity of the statement as to the color of the man who's giving it, right?
Somewhat, yes.
In other words, you're advocating a dual standard of law enforcement, the very thing that the Negro community is protesting. Isn't that right?
No, it's absolutely wrong.
In other words, what you're saying is you can't take the word of a white man, but you can't take the five words of five Negroes.
Were the only ones who were in the riot.
Negroes were the only ones in the riot?
They were probably so emotional that they probably made any wild charge that came into their head.
How do you explain the statement?
Gentlemen, we have to break the station. I'm going to ask that you just both hold off here for about 70 seconds. All right, our guest tonight, Mr. Ed Cray, who is a legal writer on legal topics, and our topic, have recent Supreme Court decisions handcuffed our police? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America. Busy America. Busy making money. Busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with the you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes? Out on that limb, without him. It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our guest tonight, Mr. Ed Cray, who is a freelance writer on legal topics. Our topic, have recent Supreme Court decisions handcuffed our police? And if you'd like to join us here at Night Call, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. The lines are now open, the operators are on duty, and we await your comment. Area code 313-846-6601. And remember, you may make the call collect if you wish. Ed, we had to interrupt Gary, one of our callers, just a few seconds ago. And so let's go again to Mr. Gary Alterman, a listener from Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL. Gary, your comment.
Okay. Well, all of these recent headlines out of L.A. incident arrived. Well, where I live, these headlines have upset so many people here, and it has it's put so much fear. You know, when you walk along, you know, you're...
Well, fear is a bad thing, Gary. There's no question about that. And there is an unfortunate aspect of the riots, and that a lot of people...
Somewhere or other, Gary's got clipped off the line.
Well,
know what happened there. But go ahead and answer his comment, please.
Hear it over the radio. Fear is a bad thing, and if the riots produced fear across the nation, this is one of the most unfortunate aspects. I imagine they did. They certainly produced fear in Los Angeles, where something like 3,000 pistols or guns were sold
during the riots to people not living in the riot area who were afraid it was coming to their neighborhood next. But count that fear as a direct proportion to the injustice of showing people, if you do right, you'll get a job and you'll get ahead and your kids will get a good education. And can you honestly say, can anybody honestly say that their community does give everybody, not just the Negro, everybody, a fair shake equal to his abilities? And I don't think we can say that yet in the United States. We're trying to work that way and to get to that position, but we're nowhere near that yet.
Ed, I want to thank Gary for calling. I'm sorry that he got cut off there. Mr. Gary Alterman from Baltimore, Maryland. Listener on WBAL. We now have a policeman, Ed, from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Yes. Listener on KFBC, Mr. Brian Rookstuhl. Hello, Brian. Speak right up, sir. You're on night call.
Yes, sir. I have a comment, sir, and I'd like to ask a question after that.
Yes, sir.
I'm a law enforcement officer, and I would estimate probably 75% of our convictions come from admission. Now, if we had thorough cut proof, so we wouldn't have to interrogate people. It's getting to the point, we warn people of their rights, but it's getting to the point that the first thing you have to do is call an attorney for them. I believe this is surely coming about. Or any attorney worth his salt is going to advise them not to talk to us. Now, if it gets to this point, we're never going to be able to get a conviction from a court. I feel this is wrong, and I want to go into the search and seizure. Here recently, we had a stolen car, which is a federal act. We opened the car door to get the serial number off the car. And they say this, the court said this constituted an illegal search and seizure. Now, I would like to know what his opinion is on this, as the people who were driving the car did not belong to them. It was a stolen car. How could it be an illegal search and seizure of a car which did not belong to them?
Well, I mean, on that point, the car was stopped for probable cause that it was a stolen car. You had a report on it, right?
These people were in a place of business and they tried to steal something. And then we located the car and we opened the car door to get the serial number.
Well, now I don't know the laws of the state of Wyoming, so I can't comment as to that. In California, trying to prove, and I think that's a fair statement of what the police officers were trying to do, the registration would be permissible. It's written in the state law. However, if it was a purely an exploratory search, looking for a concealed weapon, which they had no reason to believe the people had, any concealed weapon or anything else found would be inadmissible to try them. If you got them on the theft, then you've got the case. You may not like the idea that you get them on a lesser count than on the federal offense of the Dyer Act, but nonetheless, you did get the conviction, right?
Well, yes, but the idea of it is, this is not a state offense, it's a federal offense. We opened the car to get the serial number. They've held this as the illegal search and seizure, but I still can't understand how it would be an illegal search and seizure on a car that does not belong to them. This property is not theirs.
I don't think that would... I'm guessing here, and this is a very bad thing to do when you deal with the court, but I'm guessing that won't stand up in the federal court if you had probable cause to believe the car was a stolen vehicle. Now, if there was no probable cause, then it's just like breaking into a house. And, what can we find to convict the guy on? And you know as well as I do that your fellow officers have done this. I'm not going to try to single out the Cheyenne Police Department. But you know from reputation and from stories that it is done, these exploratory searches, because the guy's guilty. We know he's guilty, they say. So they go ahead and make the search, and they come up with evidence. But it does, indeed, as you recognize, and I'm sure your training taught you, it is an illegal exploratory search. And let's face it, every single person in the United States has probably got something in his house he'd rather not the police didn't see, including the police.
Brian?
Yes.
Do you think that recent Supreme Court decisions have handcuffed the police? You're a policeman.
Well, naturally, I'm prejudiced, and I honestly do think so. This interrogation deal on calling their attorneys right away, I think we should, the police departments, all of the nation should have, say, a 24-hour period for interrogation purposes, because so many of our convictions are on admission. We're dealing with the unknown, and... Yeah, like I said, we have fingerprints on every case. We wouldn't even need to interrogate a person. But this is something we have to do. And I think, like I say, any attorneys with his salt will tell them to keep quiet. And since we are dealing with the unknown, and you've got to prove the criminal guilty beyond a doubt, I think they're handcuffing us.
Officer, I guess, is that the proper title of address for a Cheyenne policeman?
Brian?
Yes?
What's your title? Is it policeman or officer? Or do they refer to you?
Detective, yes.
Detective, I see.
Well, Detective Rootsville, do you, when you go in, you say 75% of convictions come from, because they're backed up by confessions. It's about 80% in California. Do you, when you go in to interrogate, do you tell the guy that he does not have to answer your questions? He doesn't have to be a witness against himself?
Yes, we go through all this rigmarole about they have the right to be advised by an attorney, and they have the right to remain silent and all this.
Wait a minute now. That's just the point. It's not rigmarole. You recognize, you know, we do have a constitution, and I'm sure that you support it. I think you're probably your oath of office said that you would support that constitution. And this rigmarole is part and parcel of the constitution. And if you rattle it off just like you did to me, when you get some poor frightened guy in there, and you know how frightened they are because you've probably gotten more than a few confessions from them because of their fear, he doesn't understand you, and you know he doesn't understand you. The question is, do you hand him a card, for example, that says, I guess in Cheyenne you might have a Spanish-speaking audience. Do you hand him a card that says in English and in Spanish what his rights are and let him read it, or read it to him slowly and carefully so that he really understands what his rights are?
Well, we have a form that that they read before we take any confession from him, and plus the verbal warning.
This is true,
and I think maybe we probably should do this.
Well, I
think it's getting to the point where one of these days, the first thing you ought to do is call an attorney for a person.
No,
I think when this comes about, it's going to be impossible for us to obtain confessions, and therefore, probably, like I say, 75% of our cases we will not get convictions on.
Well, officer, as it happens, your department is so in handing and giving a fair warning to suspects is so much in a minority as to deserve special commendation.
Mr. Cray, you're saying that the Cheyenne, Wyoming Police Department is doing a good job, then?
I am indeed.
From your point of view.
Suspects, and they still get 75% convictions. If that's an efficient, good police force, if they're being fair in their warning, there's nothing wrong with that confession they're getting. But if they're not giving an honest, fair warning, or reading that statement carefully to this guy so he understands what it says, then, indeed, they're taking advantage of his ignorance. They're depriving him of his rights.
Brian, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Our time's just about up.
Well, thank you. Your program's very interesting.
Thank you, sir. It's been interesting talking to you, Mr. Brian Rookstool, a detective from the Cheyenne, Wyoming Police Department, a listener on KFBC. Mr. Ed Cray, I want to thank you for being our guest. I've enjoyed your comments, and I think that you have enlightened us, at least on your opinion, as to whether or not the recent Supreme Court decisions have handcuffed our police departments. Ed, thank you for being our guest.
Good night.
Good night, sir.
Monday night on Night Call, Mr. Edward Paulson. Our topic, why is our water dirty? Until Monday, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.